This is Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Ratchford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and Yukon Health Orthopedic and Sports Medicine. Healthy Rounds provides general information regarding medical conditions and diseases. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You are encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own medical care. And now, Dr. Anthony Alessi on WTIC, News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Healthy Rounds, the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information, and we answer all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be with you on this Saturday morning for our 58th consecutive program dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. What a difference in the past 3 weeks since our last live program. So much has changed. I was away in Vermont, where it was interesting to see that they have an 85% vaccination rate. That means 85% of the citizens of Vermont are fully vaccinated. And I found it interesting that they've reached such a high level so quickly. And there was a recent podcast interview with their director of public health. And they asked him the same question as to why have Vermonters embraced the vaccine so readily and are ready to move on from this COVID-19 virus. And his point was that there are three things Vermonters believe in. One is that they really want to preserve their own health. They look out carefully for the health of their family. But the third thing was interesting, and he felt, you know, because of the harsh winters here, Vermonters look out for their neighbors. They always check in on their neighbors, and they always do things for their neighbors. And it was their perception that getting vaccinated is something you do not only for yourself, but your neighbors. And I thought that was just a great summary. It's just an interesting approach to life and not just this battle with the pandemic. On the way home from Vermont with my wife, we had the sad situation of witnessing a motorcycle accident. We came upon the scene where the accident had occurred in Chicopee, Massachusetts, and there was a motorcyclist who was critically injured. And naturally, I stopped, and my wife was able to pull the car around, and I came upon the scene, and there were already many people there working to help save a life. And it was interesting how people from the other side, and there were people who were EMS people driving by. There were nurses. There was me. We were doing CPR. An ED physician stopped. And I thought that, isn't that what we're about in this country? Isn't that what we do when we see an accident and we see someone in danger in some way? Is we immediately think to get there and help, which is obviously the definition of bravery when you put your own circumstance behind that of the needs of someone else. And I think those analogies are not lost on how we should be dealing with the pandemic. The statistics now are just astonishing. We have over 612,000 dead Americans. We've only vaccinated about half of our country. We have plenty of vaccines available. And whenever we look at these maps where we're having trouble getting people vaccinated, it's always in some politically divided area. But we have to deal with it locally as well. And in Connecticut, we're not doing that well. On July 10th, the day of our last live program, our positivity rate for COVID-19 was only 0.82%, less than 1%. And we had been at the less than 1% level for quite a while. The positivity rate as of yesterday in the state of Connecticut is now 2.35%. So we are now approaching the numbers where we were last year. Our number of hospitalizations in Connecticut has also increased. Fortunately, the number of deaths has not increased, but hospitalizations have increased. Fully vaccinated people in Connecticut, the number is up to 63%. We've got a lot of work to do. Most recently, we have looked at it countywide, and those that are now areas of what they define as substantial COVID transmission. Earlier in the week, it was Hartford, New London, and New Haven counties. As of today, we've now added Fairfield, Tallinn, and Windham counties under substantial. So now there are only two counties left, Litchfield and Middlesex County, which fit into the category of moderate. So what does that mean? That means anyone over the age of two should be wearing a mask in public indoor spaces. That's all public indoor spaces, not in your home, if everyone is vaccinated, but in public indoor spaces. When you go to the store, when you go to Stop and Shop, okay, you should be wearing a mask, as should the employees of Stop and Shop or Walmart or wherever you go to shop. Because there are people there without masks who have not been vaccinated. And as we're going to talk a little bit about a little later, we're going to be talking about the recent outbreak in Provincetown in Massachusetts, where we have found out now that people who are vaccinated can transmit the virus. That's something, as you remember from this show, and it's not like, oh my gosh, they lied to us. Nobody lied. This virus is changing. The scene is changing. We're moving along here, and we're learning more about it. But the new Delta variant is so transmissible that people can transmit it who have been vaccinated and who are asymptomatic, without symptoms. That's why we're going back to masks. Now, one of the things that came up really in the past 3 weeks was the J&J vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Johnson & Johnson vaccine, people are saying, can cause Guillain-Barré syndrome. Guillain-Barré syndrome is a syndrome which I'm very familiar with because it is a neurologic syndrome that results in diffuse weakness, loss of sensation. It is rare. It can be seen in vaccines where you use a viral vector, which is what the J&J vaccine uses. And it's easily treated with intravenous immune globulin. So the difference here is that, first of all, that syndrome occurs in the first 2 weeks, only in the first 2 weeks of getting the vaccine. It is rare, even in the case of people who have gotten the vaccine and can be easily treated when recognized. You don't see it with the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So I want people to understand that. But in proportion to all of the millions of people who have gotten the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it is not alarming that some people have come down with the Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a syndrome of weakness and numbness that is progressive and should require immediate attention. We're going to take a short break, and then I wanted to let you know, at the bottom of the hour, I have a special guest today, Dr. David Banik. He's an MD. He also has a master's degree in public health. He is an associate professor of medicine at the University of Connecticut. He is head of the infection prevention program at the University of Connecticut. And we're going to ask him a lot of questions because he is a trusted resource for me and should be for you in terms of how we should be dealing with masks, how we're going to deal with boosters, and try to resolve some of the confusion that's going on right now. With that, we're going to take a short break, and then I'll be back. We're going to be discussing a little bit more about what went on in Provincetown and some of the opinions that have been coming in that I wanted to discuss. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, Saturday morning 11 till noon on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be back with you. So one of the things I mentioned previously was this recent outbreak in Provincetown, Massachusetts. And the outbreak has involved the Delta variant. And it's interesting because 75% of the people who became infected with the Delta variant at this time were fully vaccinated. It's important to note, of all the people who became ill, there were no deaths. And what was interesting was that Provincetown had a very low rate of infection back on July 4th, which was a time of celebration. A lot of people came out there, 4th of July. There were a lot of large gatherings, both private and public, in bars and clubs. And it was expected that the transmission rate would be pretty low, because that's what they were working off of. What we have found now from the studies there is that that was not the case, that people who have been vaccinated can transmit this new variant of the Delta variant. And that really is somewhat frightening, because now we're back to the idea of asymptomatic transmission. In one of our earlier shows, we talked about one of the terms in infectious disease being the R-naught. That is how a measure of how transmissible the virus is. So with the Alpha variant, the original COVID-19 variant that we started dealing with in 2019 and 2020, For every person who was infected, they would transmit the virus to two or three other people. With the Delta variant, it is so much more transmissible that it is believed that for every person who is infected, they can transmit it to nine other people. And the transmission, once again, is respiratory. But it is very brief. They believe it's as short as 15 seconds, meaning that a conversation with someone who is infected, may not have symptoms, probably not vaccinated. So the point there is that with that, they could then transmit the virus. So, when we look at this, we really have to be cautious. So, how do we figure this out? How do we stop this? Well, we go back to what we've said before, right? Masks, social distancing, hand washing. Those are the ways we know that work from our previous experience with the Alpha variant. What's also noted is that of the people who became infected, not only were there no deaths, but these vaccines are designed to keep people alive. The vaccines are designed so that instead of developing a fatal pneumonia, you kind of develop a nuisance kind of cold, but a highly transmissible type of cold. So we're learning a lot. And we better learn it fast because this is summer, right? The rates go down in summer of viruses. Why? Because people are outside more. You're spending more time outside, playing sports, going to the beach. You're not in a closed environment with people. So you can figure that come fall and winter, those numbers are going to rise. So if we're dealing with numbers that are rising and people becoming ill, and if you talk to physicians in Florida, Alabama, Missouri. Their emergency rooms are filled in the summer with people with COVID. So with that, we need to really start to wear masks again. That's the explanation as best that I understand it. And we are going to chat with my guest a little bit more about that. One note, and I think it's important to note, is there's a lot of misinformation. And when you get into political opinions, mixing with science, it never works. And that recently happened this past week with an editorial written by Chris Powell of the Journal Inquirer. And also the fact that he's a regular guest on the morning show with Ray. And actually, his article was about the essentially supporting vaccine skepticism. And he is obviously a vaccine skeptic. What was interesting was that as he talked, this was a very rare thing, because if anybody listens to WTIC regular, they will know how benign an interviewer Ray is. And yet he corrected him several times during his moments on the soapbox. But let's talk about it. Some of the points he brings up are that this vaccine is only approved for emergency use. That's absolutely true. We hope that's going to change in the next couple of months. But he also talks that it's an emergency use because there are tens of thousands of adverse reactions. Well, what he fails to mention is the denominator, right? So when you talk about an adverse reaction, the next word should be these reactions out of how many vaccines were administered. Do you realize we have now administered over 4 billion, that's with a B, over 4 billion vaccinations worldwide? So his number of tens of thousands of adverse reactions. Now, adverse reactions could be a rash, could be reddening, it could be any number of things. But when you talk numbers, you have to be somewhat honest about it. And never in the history of man have we reached these numbers in such a short period of time to administer 4 billion vaccines already. He also likes to emphasize that we need to develop treatment with ivermectin, which is used in India, the Czech Republic, South Africa, and Latin America. What he's talking about is using ivermectin as a treatment. So understand the insanity of that. We're now treating a condition that's avoidable. I have nothing against treatment, but if you can avoid the condition, that's like treating lung cancer because we still allow smoking in public. Remember that? Remember when people could smoke wherever they wanted and people getting secondary smoke got lung cancer? Yeah, that's what happened. He also talks about this being a worldwide medical experiment. This is not an experiment, folks. This is a war. And healthcare workers are on the front lines. They are the combatants. Unfortunately, vaccines are clearly the best weapon we have in this war. This is not an experiment. And it's important that folks like Mr. Powell and others, I don't want to just pick on him, because obviously I've read his things before, in many cases, very reasonable guy. But in this case, he's ignored the science in order to rally his political followers. And that's the problem here. So the sooner Mr. Powell and his opinion writers realized that we are at war and that there are people dying, and that we need to come together to fight this thing by getting vaccinated, the better off all of us are going to be. With that, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back in the second half of this program with my guest, Dr. David Banik from the University of Connecticut. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080.
with Dr. Anthony Alessi, Saturday morning 11 till noon on WTIC News Talk 1080 at WTIC.com.
We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi. And it's great to have as my guest today, Dr. David Banik. Dr. Banik is a medical doctor. He has a master's degree in public health. He's an associate professor of medicine at the University of Connecticut and head of the infection prevention program at the University of Connecticut. More importantly, he has been a trusted resource for me and my family as we have moved through the pandemic. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dr. Alessi. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's get right to it. We're dealing with the Delta variant. Can you explain to our listeners what has evolved and why we're in the situation we're in right now?
Sure. So, you know, when we look back over what's happened over the last 18 months, the, you know, COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus originated in its wild-type form. And over time, as with as what happens with almost all respiratory viruses, you know, mutations occur, and certain variants that are that spread more easily, more transmissible, start to emerge and become the dominant variant. So you may recall a few months ago we were talking about the B.1.1.7 variant, which is the alpha variant that originated in the UK, starting to become the dominant variant, and now we're seeing this Delta variant, which was first identified in Asia. And has now spread globally. It seems to be very transmissible, seems to spread very easily, particularly among unvaccinated populations. And, you know, that's what we're up against, seeing our uptick in cases here in the U.S. and throughout many parts of the world.
David, we talked a little bit earlier on the show about the data coming from Provincetown, Massachusetts, and why that's so significant, because so many people there who were vaccinated did contract the Delta variant. Can you talk a little bit about that and that information that was provided to us recently?
Sure. So, yeah, I think that's a an important report that just came out from CDC. So in Provincetown, over the first half of July, there was a huge gathering of individuals, you know, thousands, potentially tens of thousands of individuals that converged onto Provincetown around the 4th of July holiday and the subsequent week. And these, what was identified is that there was very significant transmission of the SARS-CoV-2 virus occurring, and occurred both in vaccinated and there were many unvaccinated individuals who became infected, and upwards of, I think it was 450 or so. And what this showed was that when the viral loads were being tested, so the amount of virus in individuals who did test positive, there were high viral loads in the unvaccinated population, but there were also high viral loads in the vaccinated group as well. This sort of led to a conclusion that, those individuals who have been vaccinated and get what we call those breakthrough infections may also potentially spread virus to others. Now, I think, you know, we have to take that data with a grain of salt in terms of that transmission risk. You know, we need to really see if the conclusions that we're drawing in terms of viral loads does translate into more infectivity. And I think, you know, that data will, you know, continue to be examined. But it did raise that possibility that a vaccinated individual could potentially spread the virus. Now, I think it's also important to look at the entirety of the context as well. So first, the situation, right? These were young people. There was a lot of very intense social gathering, indoors, large gatherings in bars, with a lot of socialization without mask wearing. So I think we have to think about that type of context when we're looking at this data. And additionally, it's important to look at the outcomes. So even those individuals who did test positive after being vaccinated, almost all exclusively did very well. There were only, I think there were maybe four hospitalizations, which is very small compared to the total number of individuals who were involved in this outbreak. So, you know, I think it shows that the vaccines are highly protective against illness. You know, those individuals who did test positive after being vaccinated generally almost exclusively had mild symptoms. You know, hospitalization was very uncommon. So I think that's good. That really supports how effective these vaccines are in preventing illness. But, you know, it does put on the radar that there may be a possibility that individuals who are vaccinated and develop infection might potentially be able to spread to others.
Which is a big problem. I mean, previously, I mean, weeks ago, we thought that people who got vaccinated were not able to spread the virus and, in fact, possibly reach sterilizing immunity. So this is, it's just kind of a big shift, isn't it?
You know, I think, you know, it does make us think about things a little bit differently. You know, I think, you know, it's still important to maintain the big picture that individuals who are unvaccinated are much more likely to develop clinical symptoms and also mostly more likely, or they are more likely to spread to others. But knowing that there is the potential for a vaccinated person to spread to others does make us, you know, think a little bit more about additional measures that we need. And, you know, we can talk about what those might be. And, you know, indoor masking, you know, has been the primary focus that's been recommended. But, you know, it does make us, you know, think about things in a little bit more detail when we, you know, think about what the next, you know, couple of weeks are going to look like and what we can do to help drive down transmission.
Is the solution so basic as to just going back to wearing a mask when you're indoors? I mean, it seems simple, and yet it has been effective when we've dealt with the Alpha variant before we had a vaccine. I mean, is it that easy?
So, you know, I think that's a key strategy. You know, I still think first and foremost, vaccination is going to be the primary way that we're drive down transmission. But then we look at those additional measures, and indoor masking in public areas is that next measure. You know, I think, you know, it's an effective way to reduce transmission risk. You know, it's, you know, unfortunately, with all the politicization, it's become a complicated matter. You know, personally, I don't mind doing it at all. And I've begun to do it.
And neither do I. Neither do I.
The Connecticut Department of Public Health actually just issued a recommendation almost entirely statewide, based on the amount of, you know, virus transmission and the number of cases, that any indoor environment in public, you know, masking should be is strongly recommended. So, you know, I think that it's sort of that next layer. And then, you know, we think about additional measures like physical distancing and avoiding large gatherings. You know, I think in some situations we should be thinking about that as well. But after the vaccination, the masking is kind of that next measure that's needed. And, you know, right now when we're seeing high transmission, you know, I think it's the reasonable next step. You know, I'm hopeful that we won't reach those need for additional measures like more physical distancing, and because those have a substantial impact on, you know, social interactions. But, you know, I think now we're at the point where the masking is the measure that is what's recommended, and that'll, you know, my hope is that that will be sufficient to kind of reduce this uptick that we're seeing.
So let's talk about the unvaccinated population. Our children, my grandchildren, I have 5 grandchildren. The oldest is 6. None are vaccinated. They're getting ready to go back to school. Should they be wearing a mask?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that is the right measure. You know, I think CDC just put out in their last recommendation that in schools, all individuals, vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals, should be wearing masks. Because we have a large proportion of kids who are not eligible for vaccination. So masking, you know, is the next step in school environments. And we've seen that masking can be very effective in schools, you know, in terms of preventing transmission. And I think that was successful, both allowing for in-person school, which I think is very important, and preventing transmission. So, you know, I think universal masking in school environments is going to be the plan, you know, at least here in Connecticut. You know, we'll, you know, hopefully, again, that will be the way that we're going to accommodate in-person learning, which I think is so critical.
It's an interesting side note that my grandchildren don't mind wearing a mask. They kind of got used to it. And what's interesting is people, you know, with these signs, I need to see my child smile. I heard someone recently say the children who are not smiling are the ones who get COVID because they get very sick. So, you know, these protesters, you know, as adults, we're trying to project our own needs on these children. But overall, I think children have adapted fairly well to the restrictions that I hope are temporary until we can get enough people vaccinated.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my 7-year-old has been in in-person school wearing a mask, and he had a great year. I think going back to the spring of 2020, when kids were home, I think any opportunity to get them back in the classroom for in-person instruction, if that involves a mask, so be it. But I think the children seem to be adapting to that well.
We're going to take a short break. Then we're going to be back with my guest, Dr. David Banik. We're going to talk about booster shots. Are we going to need booster shots? We're also going to talk about, let's get a look at the future. Which way are we going in the state of Connecticut and in this country? You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, Saturday morning 11 till noon on WTIC News Talk 1080 at WTIC.com.
We're back live with my guest, Dr. David Banik. David, so everybody's questioning the need, or will there be a need for booster shots? I almost welcome the need for a booster shot, because I think we're getting there. But what do you think? What's going to happen, especially with regard to the elderly population, our parents, and how that moves along?
So, I think we're, just like you said, I think we're getting there. There's more and more data coming out that certain populations, and the groups that we've really got our eye on are those immunocompromised individuals, and elderly individuals, the groups that we would expect to sort of generate less antibody, less immune response to the vaccine, and that's across the board with all vaccines. I think those are going to be the primary focus. The data is coming out showing that, as we would expect, those groups do have lower antibody response. And I think what's even more important is that the data is now showing that in immunocompromised individuals, specifically certain populations, giving a booster dose does actually boost up the level of protective antibodies. So, I think we're going to be seeing booster doses initially roll out in those populations. We're still waiting for the FDA authorization expansion to allow for additional doses. And I think that will happen in the coming weeks. I think that'll be the initial focus rather than sort of a general population recommendation for booster doses. But I think there's the science supports that. The science now is following up those individuals who are in the clinical trials, showing that the young, relatively young, healthy population, the antibody levels do dip over time, but they still remain relatively high, and they still provide that protection against symptomatic illness in the clinical trial participants. So I think that's encouraging. So I think we've really got to focus down on those vulnerable populations, particularly the immunocompromised and elderly individuals. And I think in the coming months, we'll see some additional recommendations on those groups.
David, when you talk about the elderly, do we need boosters in the elderly because they have a lower titer? Their titers will drop lower than in younger people? And what age are you talking about when we talk elderly? Because people have said over 75, over 65. What do you think?
I think, a few factors. Generally with other vaccines, when we see older folks, we're talking in the 75 plus, maybe even older than that, that's a population where antibody levels tend to wane a bit quicker than in the younger groups. I can't predict exactly what the FDA and CDC are going to identify as the cutoff when it comes to older populations. But there's sort of a linear relationship there too, to some degree, that the older you get, the higher likelihood that your immunity is going to wane over time. I think the other factor is that, in Connecticut and in a lot of other states, that was the group that was prioritized to get the initial vaccination. So they were vaccinated the earliest after the healthcare workers. So, taking that into account that over time, their antibody levels, they've just had a longer time to wane based on when they got their initial doses. So, I don't know exactly what cutoff they're going to use, but, I think we're looking in the sort of 75-plus group as maybe a focus, but that's still a little bit to be determined.
Would you recommend, when we come out with a booster, will it be an mRNA booster if you got an mRNA vaccine originally, or does it make any difference?
Yeah, I suspect it will be. I think there's a lot of questions as to whether it needs, how matched it needs to be. So if you got the Pfizer dose for your first two, are you definitely going to need to get a Pfizer dose for your third, or can you get a Moderna mRNA vaccine? But, you know, I think the data on boosters has really focused on the mRNA vaccines, both looking at booster doses in individuals who initially got the mRNA vaccine, but also looking at people who got the non-mRNA vaccines, like the AstraZeneca vaccine, followed by an mRNA booster. That seems to really increase antibody levels substantially. So I think that'll be the focus in terms of additional doses, but still to be determined. And there's studies looking at comparing the response with giving an mRNA vaccine after getting like the AstraZeneca or J&J versus getting, you know, a subsequent dose of J&J. So that data is still under review by FDA. And I think we'll get more clarity from them in the coming weeks.
Another topic is the need or lack thereof of mandates for vaccines. For example, we're saying now wear a mask when you go to a large, if you're going to be at Stop and Shop or Walmart where it's crowded and you don't know who's vaccinated or not, you should wear a mask. But yet employees are not required to wear masks. Employees are certainly not required to be vaccinated. Are we getting to that point? Because I'm a little hesitant. I mean, you go to a restaurant or a fast food place. Some people who work there are wearing masks. Some are not. And now we have new information. Are we getting in Connecticut to where we're going to have some new mandates?
So, you know, I think what we're seeing is that, in the private sector and in some parts of the government, like federal government, mandates are starting to take hold. You know, I don't think we're going to see like a population level mandate for vaccination, but certainly in healthcare settings, mandates are emerging for healthcare workers, and many United Hospital Association and National Hospital Organizations and many hospitals are starting to implement mandates for healthcare workers. When it comes to other industries, I think people are recognizing that mandates can have an important role in reducing spread and also providing confidence in the public. So, the federal government now is there's now mandatory vaccination for everyone in the military, and now there's movement on mandatory vaccination for federal workers and those who contract with the federal government. I know President Biden has been moving on that. So, I think we're going to see that in some groups and even the private sector, too. I think organizations, particularly those in the service sector, are going to start to move towards mandates for their employees. So, I think I don't anticipate we're going to see like a statewide mandate or anything like that. But I think in some groups and some sectors of the economy and of, the employment, we are going to see more and more movement towards mandatory vaccination.
Are you surprised we haven't seen mandatory vaccination mandates in healthcare by now?
A lot of organizations are moving in that direction. Organizations here in Connecticut have started implementing mandatory vaccination, and there's been a lot of sort of viewing this from all different angles. In healthcare, healthcare organizations. The relationship between employers and employees can get a little complicated. But I think, as we see more and more large health systems implement mandates, national organizations now are recommending mandatory vaccine for healthcare. I think more and more facilities and healthcare organizations are going to have the confidence to be able to move to mandatory vaccination for their employees. So I think that's a trend that'll continue in the coming weeks and months.
Couldn't happen soon enough. But let's look at this. And I guess it's kind of a personal question, but I've been hearing about people on the front line who have been working, especially in Florida, Alabama, Missouri. They're starting to lose their sense of empathy, with people who just come in they could have been vaccinated, not getting vaccinated, still against it, and spreading it, to children. Are we getting to that point where we're starting to lose our sense of empathy? And I'm not just asking you personally, but, you know, we have so many nurses, respiratory therapists who are working on the front line day and night and dealing with people who don't necessarily want to be helped. I'm troubled by this and trying to deal with it myself because we work with people who are at our side and we don't know if they're vaccinated or not. Are we getting to that point, David?
There's certainly a lot of fatigue in the healthcare world. We're seeing, now that we've been working through COVID now for over a year and a half, it's been exhausting. And, a lot of the frontline healthcare workers are feeling very fatigued. And, I think there's some element of frustration among many on the front lines that, know that we have a way to prevent infection, that's well established. I mean, the vaccines, we've been talking about, breakthrough cases, but, that's really such a minority. I mean, here in Connecticut, the data just came out that individuals who are unvaccinated are 17 times more likely than a vaccinated individual to test positive. And the risk of hospitalization is so much higher among individuals who are not vaccinated that, healthcare workers, recognize that, and that's, being communicated reasonably well, still seeing hesitancy in vaccine uptake. I think, many do find that frustrating. I think we're doing all we can to maintain empathy, but, I think the fatigue does play into that. We're trying to encourage vaccination and a lot of incentivization to get people vaccinated. And, I think, we're still obligated to work with our patients and, our colleagues and encourage vaccination. But the fatigue is real. And, I think it needs to be acknowledged.
David, thank you. Thank you for all you do. Thanks for spending time with us today. And thank you for always being a resource for me and for this program as we fight this battle. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Many thanks to our studio producer. Anthony DiRenzo has been on the board. Jeff Chandler is in charge of sales and marketing for Healthy Rounds. Until next week, please stay healthy. And please, please, please get vaccinated. It's the only way we're going to win this war. Until next week, this is Dr. Anthony Alessi. Stay healthy.
This has been Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi. Sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Rochford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and Yukon Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Be sure to tune in next Saturday morning at 11 for more Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.